Hey guys, I'm Eric McLane.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go!
Welcome in, everybody, and happy Monday here on the Gramlich and McLane podcast. It was, you know, I feel like, Mac, every time I say it was a crazy weekend. This one was pretty crazy, and it started with Thursday night leading into Friday and all that happened at Clemson, of course. And we're going to spend some time on that Clemson-Boston College game and what did it mean, what does it mean going forward. But we also had some other crazy games. Our Big Three, three really good games. Big Three all decided by a touchdown or less.
Yeah, they absolutely delivered, Kelly. It was so fun to watch. It was interesting enough, you know, looking at this weekend on paper, I was like, man, it's going to be a snooze fest. You know, we were searching hard to find a Big Three to talk about, but man, all three delivered. So whoever picked those, great job. And then even the speed round games, you know, they were still great things in each of them, really interesting things. So I think it just kind of makes you take a step back and say, hey, anytime we're playing football, it's going to be a great weekend, and this weekend certainly a big testament from that. Guys, I want to just tease this out there to you. You're not going to want to miss this Wednesday, just like the past two Wednesdays. It's been really fun to get these different guests come on. One of my favorite human beings, a guy that if you didn't see him in a helmet and jersey and shoulder pads, you would not know that he is the best route runner in the NFL, my brother, Hunter Renfroe. I cannot wait, Kelly, to get him on the podcast.
Heck yes. We are so excited about this guest. And we try to have the guest fit with the big game of the weekend, or at least have some sort of fit into a big game that's coming up. And of course, we want to have ACC guests, and we want to have former student athletes. That's something that we've really enjoyed having. And with Eric Wood and Mike Golic Jr., those two guys were awesome. Renfroe is a guy that you and I both know. I know him decently from some interviews. You were a teammate with him in 2015, so you were the old
guy.
Yeah,
I called him a manager the first time I met him. I thought he was one of our new managers on the team. And we maybe get into that story,
yeah, but
really funny the first time that I met Hunter. Y'all are going to like this story. I'm sure you've heard it before. But Kelly, before we get rolling into football, I have a secret question for you. I've been holding off on this. I didn't want to give you any indication because I wanted your true reaction right now. It is November 1st, November 2nd when you guys listen to this. Is it too early for Christmas decorations or Christmas music? Go.
It is not, Mac.
That is what I'm talking about. Come on. Now, I'm with the music. I'm not going to put up anything yet until closer, if not after Thanksgiving. But, you know, Khaki's going to be a little upset because we're going to start having some Christmas music in the car.
So is Khaki kind of against it?
Yeah, it's a good balancing act. You know, we'd probably have like our Christmas tree up right now if it was just me.
me too.
Thank goodness for her. She pulls it back and makes us look like normal Americans. I'm full elf.
You are like Will Ferrell from Elf.
Right.
Totally see that. One year in grad school, I did set up my tree on November 1st.
There's
my roommates and I decided
that.
It was time. The reason why November 1st is the beginning of the holiday season, it's very simple, Mac. When you turn on the television, do you see Thanksgiving and Christmas commercials?
Yes.
It is the beginning of the holiday season.
That's right. We have all shifted.
Our mindset has shifted to the holiday season. November 1st is the start.
Let me tell you something. I walked into Home Depot a month ago, just looking for, you know, some basic wood screws, and there was holiday stuff, Christmas stuff everywhere. So really, October 1st might be the new date where, you know, it's acceptable.
Well, technically, because you have Halloween, so that is your holiday. It's a holiday. You get into
holiday
season. That's
right. Exactly.
Did you guys have some trick-or-treaters last night?
Oh, man. Yeah, we did. So Khaki Mag did a great job setting it all up. She put a giant spider web at our front door so nobody could, you know, ring the doorbell and interrupt, you know, the huddle and live TV there. That would have been funny. But she had it set up. We probably had close to 55 people come by the house, which was really cool. I'll tell you what, though, it was severely toned down from the year before. Our street, our neighborhood goes really hard. So people were super safe. It wasn't like massive crowds walking anywhere, which was good to see because I really didn't know what to expect with just this crazy time we're living in. How about you guys?
We did not get that many. We're at the end of a street and we're kind of in a neighborhood that weirdly doesn't have a lot of children. I don't know.
No street lights, no children. Like it's a scary place to go.
But two people came by and I think I kind of scared them because I was so excited that they were there. So I think they kind of wanted to leave and just said, who's that weird lady? Like, why is she so excited? But we gave them.
Did you give them like all your candy or what? Like, were they actually happy after they left? Because you gave them so much candy because no one else
came
by.
We had pretty good candy. Reese's, yeah. I mean, stuff like that.
Oh, that's the king. So you started off with
I know, that's your favorite, right, Mike? Okay, speaking of the king, the number one team in the country. Let's talk about
Clemson.
Look
at that transition.
How about that? How about that transition?
They don't pay you enough money for this. This is crazy.
Let's get into our big three. Right now, three ranked teams in the AP poll, three ACC teams that are ranked. Number one, Clemson. Number four, Notre Dame. Number 11, Miami. Before we even talk about Clemson, BC, and get into the big three, what's your take on Clemson only receiving 33 of 62 first place votes? Alabama did not overtake the Tigers, but there are, this was much closer than in weeks past.
How much time do you want to spend here? Cause I have time for the AP poll. I promise you I do. Honestly, Kelly, this poll is so irrelevant. It's fun for us to talk about because it's the only poll right now. And the coaches, I don't even know why we still do that one. It's even worse.
I don't know why we pretend that coaches have time to watch all these teams.
Right,
it's ridiculous.
Right.
It's a
so
GA
silly.
Doing that
it's
or something.
It's so dumb. Literally, it's so dumb. But this poll is just, it's terrible. I mean, you look at we have four two-loss teams that are ranked. Three of them are in the Big 12, which has been atrocious this year. How Texas, no offense, is ranked, how Oklahoma is ranked, and Iowa State is 17. Like, come on. That is a crazy
They
to
lost
me.
To Louisiana.
Louisiana, who is not ranked anymore. I got it. At one point in time, sure. Right now, no. It makes zero sense to me. I'd love to just hear some of these voters' rationale because the bias that you see in some of these things, I guarantee if you look at a lot of these guys, who they're voting for corresponds with either the league they cover or the school that they attend. It's such a joke. But anyway, you know, I'm actually surprised that Clemson held on to the number one spot. I truly was expecting, just knowing how these AP voters are, that Alabama would be number one. So I think that, you know, it's good to see, you know, it's good to have two ACC teams in the top four. I just, you know, overall, I'm ready for the CFP poll to be coming out, which we still have a couple of weeks to get to. But, you know, it's fun to at least talk about
soon enough. And, you know, I feel like it's almost a tradition now that Clemson gets removed from the number one spot without losing. So I'm looking forward to that.
Undefeated somehow falls to two.
It doesn't even feel like football season until that happens. Okay. In our big three, let's start with the first game on our list here. Number one, Clemson defeats Boston College 34-28. DJ Uiagalelei in place for Trevor Lawrence, who has COVID, which of course we broke down extensively in our most recent podcast. DJ was exceptional. 30 for 41 for 342, two touchdowns, one rushing touchdown, no turnovers. Mac, let's just focus on him for a second because multiple times, especially in that second half when I felt like he really settled in, he made me say, wow, just multiple times with his poise, the velocity with which he threw the ball, his size. He just seems like the total package.
Yeah, he looks so polished, Kelly. Just get out the get-go. You know, the throws that he was making, some deep comebacks, some deep curl routes. A back shoulder ball that literally looked like it belonged on Sundays. It was funny. I texted EJ right when he did it, and EJ responds in all caps. EJ Manuel, for those who don't know, on the huddle with me, ACC Network, was just freaking out, saying, you know, that was such an amazing throw. His footwork. I mean, he had a huge wide stance, was ready whenever Amari turned his head, and he rifled that thing in there. So really impressive. I mean, 73%, your first start ever. Facing all kinds of adversity, all kinds of guys missing from the team, being down 18 points to then come back and have a 6-point victory. It was amazing to see that young man and his kind of evolution right before our eyes, seeing him get more and more comfortable, confident in his play. And really, I thought what was really interesting to me, and I'm still maybe even on the fence with this, Kelly, 50-50 with whether which way I believe, okay. You know, whether it's his shoulder was still hurt or if truly the game plan was set and there just wasn't that many quarterback runs, because that's just not what Trevor does. You know, he pulls it, and if he reads it, he'll take it. But when you're talking about design power, design counter, design whatever for a quarterback. Clemson really doesn't run that with Trevor. You don't need to. With DJ, it fits his skill set, and we didn't see that. And I talked about it on the show. I talked about it on the huddle that we would see that. But I guess the coordinators felt comfortable enough. It's been a while.
Just one now.
We've been used to two of them. So I think that now moving forward, I'm really excited to see what does a game plan look like that is completely molded around and for DJ. Now, I thought it was an excellent choice, Coach Sweeney and the staff, to go ahead and announce that Trevor's not going to be playing, because that's probably all we'd be talking about right now. It's what everybody would be asking all week long. And that's just, you know, kind of annoying to deal with. And it sounds like Trevor is doing great. He's on the road to recovery. And it probably, number one, wasn't fair or is not fair to ask him to say, hey, all right, you took 10 days off. Now let's go play the number four team in the country. And, you know, more importantly, it's probably not safe. You talk about conditioning wise, where he is. Now, I'm sure that he's out running sprints safely, staying in shape the best that he can by himself, isolated. But
you can't risk that. Yeah, you can't put him in a situation where he hasn't practiced and maybe he's just not ready to be out there in full contact. That's irresponsible to do that with his future.
Right. And here's a little, you know, opening the curtain on that program. Even if DJ did not go 73%, 342 yards, two touchdowns and win the game, Trevor still wouldn't be playing. It doesn't matter. I don't want to hear anybody say that because DJ did this, that's the reason. I promise you that that doesn't matter. So, you know, it just showed that Clemson's going to be in a great place for another 2 years after Trevor is the first round draft pick, with DJ assumingly, you know, being the guy. But how about we talk a little bit, Kelly, about the best player in the country in Travis Etienne? I mean, just to see what this guy has turned into, 28 touches, 224 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, just an absolute freak of nature, the way that he has changed his game and has worked on catching the ball. Guys, I promise you, if you know anything about Clemson, if you know anything about his story, when he came into Clemson, he could not catch a pitch. Mind you, not a slant route or a nine route or a deep fade ball down the field. He had no hands, brick hands, and he worked so hard on that. And for him to go out, have seven catches, 140 yards, which if you do the math on that, that equals 20 yards per a catch. I mean, that's unbelievable. He leads the country in yards after the catch. He is tremendous. The ACC's all-time leading rusher now. Just such a somehow quiet, underrated, underappreciated career that I hope gets rewarded with a first-round draft pick and a great, successful NFL career, because he is just that special.
Do you think he had more than just Frosted Flakes for breakfast?
I can guarantee it. But if he doesn't sign a Frosted Flakes deal as soon as he is done playing, he has a terrible agent.
good call. That's like Trevor and Head and Shoulders. These things write themselves. Right. You've just got to figure that out.
That's right.
We can talk about DJ all we want, but Etienne, this is a tough way to put it. I'm not saying Etienne made DJ look good, but he made DJ's life a lot easier. Some of the yards after catch for Etienne, like you said, Mac, 20 yards a catch. That a lot of that is Etienne doing work. Did you freak out when Etienne ran that go route and caught that ball?
Yes.
Because I know you love it when they use Etienne like that.
Yeah. I mean, he's literally split out and he has a corner lined up on him, not a linebacker, which, yeah, he toasted linebackers all day, but he beat a corner that's his job. And it's just, he's such a special player. And then you add my yardage here is not even considering what he did on kick return. I mean, after that, you know, second half he comes in, I think he had 40 yards. So that's, 264 total yards there. He's just so versatile as a player. He's smart. He understands pass protection now. He knows how to use his body and can literally impact you anywhere on the field offensively at any position skill-wise. He's even shown he can throw a pass. He threw a touchdown last year to Justin Ross, I believe it was, in the Military Appreciation Day game. So he is a really, truly special talent. And it's been amazing just to see his evolution and the way he has gotten better every single year.
Because we are going to talk about these other games, guys, we promise. Where does Boston College go from here? What a tough loss to be up 18, to not score in the second half. When they went up 21-7, when Travis Etienne fumbled, which was one of the big mistakes that Etienne made, really the only one, but it was quite costly.
You know what? Hold on. I want to stop you right there. So I think there are three things at fault here. Number one, Etienne surely should have had a breadbasket. He was reaching for it. But I think that was because it was so high. I mean, if he would have had the breadbasket, I mean, you're talking about putting your forearm over your head. I mean, DJ hit him right in the face. That was a terrible handoff by DJ. Again, maybe it's different if the breadbasket's there. But even more importantly than both of those things, they should have scored two plays earlier. The offensive line did not get any push those first two plays. And really, they should have walked in the end zone. It was a little bit embarrassing as a former offensive lineman to see how they struggled right there. So I was really not concerned, a little concerned, but more confused on just if guys weren't being targeted correctly, if you were just tired, because that was really interesting. So, Kelly, I don't want us to throw it all on Travis with that particular thing, but it was a weird play for
sure. That's a really good point.
Kind of Orange Bowl flashbacks, a little PTSD.
My husband literally said that when that happened, and I told him to shut up.
A little weird. A tear or two might have fallen from my eye.
Max crying, but it's fine.
Right.
Okay, but that was a huge – well, we can – and I really appreciate that analysis, because that's stuff that if you didn't play, you don't really understand what happened there. Right. That being said, it was a 14-point swing, and it was a huge swing for Boston College. Where does BC go from here, considering they play Notre Dame very soon as well?
Yeah, you know, I think they go straight up. I truly do. I think what we've seen from Coach Hafley in such a short amount of time and a very limited access time to his guys, you're thinking about doing, you know, install over Zoom, not being able to physically be with your guys to pour in your culture, but somehow it still has gotten there. These are the same guys. I'm sure we've hit on this a couple of times during this podcast and all across different things that we both do. He has changed these guys, the swagger, the confidence. It's the exact same people that were there a year ago outside of a quarterback and minus a fantastic running back who's now in the NFL. So what Coach Hafley has done offensively, defensively, it's been very impressive. Phil Jurkovec, he's going to be a top 10 draft pick whenever he leaves. I can guarantee you that. He has all the measurables. He played, you know, at Notre Dame and now Boston College. So he has those, you know, bloodlines, if you will, to the NFL. You look at the great quarterbacks that have come from both of those programs. And just what he does as a player is going to translate to the next level so well. I mean, I'm thinking Steelers, I'm thinking Patriots, I'm thinking even the Panthers, those type of schemes where they can really use a solid quarterback, a big-time quarterback, when you think of those people moving on who are there now. So this team is really close. And I'm even thinking next year close, like second-best team in the ACC. Wow. So I obviously had a love affair with Boston College before this season. You knew that. It was my deep, dark secret. Now everybody knows it, and especially the way that they played was really good. Now, I think one thing that was interesting was the second half. They came out 28 points, 209 yards, walked up and down the field on Clemson. Coach Venables, defensive coordinator Clemson, went into the lab, figured it out, held Boston College to 0 points. And 66 yards. I mean, it was a remarkable response by Clemson, but you would just have thought that BC could have figured something out, but there were no answers. And so that's a little bit concerning, but I'm accrediting that to going against the best defensive coordinator in the country.
Boston College hosts Notre Dame November 14th. That is going to be a good one. I cannot wait for that game. And we're going to have a special guest on to preview that too.
We're dropping all kinds of guest hints tonight. I'm not telling you who that one is, but you're going to not want to miss that one either.
Okay. Two more games in our big three here, Mac. Virginia Tech defeats Louisville 42-35 in Louisville. This was a really exciting game. Hendon Hooker was perfect. 10 for 10 for 183 yards. He did have a fumble, amazing, but he had three rushing touchdowns. Khalil Herbert was really good. We said for Virginia Tech, keep the ball on the ground. Run the ball, run through Herbert, play through Herbert, let Hooker pick his spots. And that's what they did.
Yeah, especially against this Louisville defense who has just struggled so much this year and really last year and the year before that. And it's a trend so that they have to figure it out on that side. But for Virginia Tech, getting back to what works, you know, Khalil Herbert, 7 yards a clip, Hendon Hooker getting in three touchdowns. Really kind of easy. I mean, he walked in on those. I know he did an acrobatic Superman Cam Newton celebration touchdown there, but he could have walked in there. It was wide open. And then defensively for Virginia Tech, forcing three picks. I thought that was really key in this game, especially with Louisville. Louisville could not establish the run, and Virginia Tech did a great job of getting after the quarterback. They had a handful of sacks, tackles for loss, creating that chaos up front where it's just hard to target. I mentioned, you know, can't establish the run. You look at the stat sheet and it's a little bit misleading. You know, Kelly, they had like 100 and maybe 98, close to 200 yards rushing. 90 of those came off a trash can play that Javian Hawkins just happened to house for 90 yards. I mean, they were running out the clock at halftime, and I turned my head away. I look back and he's at the 10 yard line. I'm like, whoa, you know, what the heck just happened? So it's a little bit, I don't know how you want to phrase it, but it's misleading.
I get what you're saying.
You know,
yeah.
Cause you take those 90 yards away, now it's 100 yards rushing, and it's just like, not as good as day as we thought it was. You know, Malik played really, really good, but it is almost impossible to overcome three interceptions. He had a career day. I think that was his career high, you know, 350 plus, was really bombing it out. But again, those picks came up to bite him. But the good thing with Louisville, again, I'm not one to, you know, take good things from losses. You can learn lessons, but I don't think you can hang your hat on them. They showed fight. They never gave up, scored 21 points in the fourth quarter, were an onside kick, delay a game that they got away from potentially winning the football game. So there's effort there. There's something there. There's something to build on. But, man, what a tough, disappointing year for Louisville that it's just, you know, it's going to be tough. And you just have to keep fighting, have to keep coming back. Again, we mentioned it. There's culture there already. Staff has done a really good job of implementing that and just understanding, hey, we love you guys. We want you guys to fight. And that's at least what they've done, but disappointing to say the least.
They have a somewhat manageable schedule left. So if they can win some of those games, get some confidence heading into year three for Satterfield. One of the biggest issues, you brought it up for Louisville, the three interceptions. At this point, Louisville is the worst team in the league when it comes to turnover margin, minus 11, even worse than Duke. Now they don't have,
that's just because Duke can force turnovers.
Yeah, they don't have more overall turnovers than Duke. I want to be clear. But they are minus 11 in the margin, so they have to get that cleaned up.
Same thing with Georgia Tech. Not to point out two bad things, but Duke and Georgia Tech turn the ball over more than anybody in the world.
Well, we'll get to Duke because things are a little better.
They'll have their moment.
In our speed round.
They'll have their moment.
The final game of our big three, Virginia upsets North Carolina, 44-41. Max, mine was blown. So was mine. I want to read you this stat from our guy, Brian Ives, ACC Network producer. Because it's so well done and it's so important to help us understand what's going wrong with North Carolina right now. UNC's special teams ranked 99 out of 103 teams in efficiency in two losses. North Carolina special teams have missed two field goals, have had two punts blocked, have had a muffed punt, and a failure to contain on a fake kick that we saw against Virginia. So many issues for UNC. Here's what blows my mind about this game, Mac. UNC lost and never punted. How does that happen?
Yeah, you know what, Kelly? I was dead wrong about this game, so I don't ever know.
It's just so funny.
Yeah, it's so funny just the inconsistencies that exist in college football. And I've been saying ACC a lot, but it literally is across the board. I mean, you look at LSU, national champion, 15-0, greatest offense we've ever seen, get whooped by Auburn, which got whooped by a team that LSU whooped by 40 points. So it doesn't
like Michigan beats Minnesota handily, loses to Michigan State. It's in every league.
Makes no sense. So, you know, to see it was great to see. Well, I'll start with your question about UNC and the special teams, huge thing. I think the inconsistency on defense, special teams, it's super alarming. It's super eye-popping. It's all over. You can see it. There's obviously been flashes on defense of I'll even say greatness, but special teams has been abysmal. They line up in a fake punt. Kelly, let me tell you something. If there's a quarterback that has run the ball 100 times in on a punt, what do you think is going to happen?
It's a fake.
Everybody in the world knows that. They lined up in like punt block.
That's Nick Saban when you put Justin Fields in. Right.
Look out. I wonder what's going to happen. It just was wild. And the fact that they couldn't stop that and then go win the game was just, I don't know. It's less than head scratching. It's frustrating and you have to be really upset about it. But at the end of the day, you're 4-2. You've got a really good quarterback who had a career day. 82% completion ratings on 443 yards. That is wild. Four touchdowns. Sam just, you know, he's a fantastic quarterback, Kelly, but there's one massive thing that he has to get better at that's really hurting his team and could, you know, be one of the reasons they lost the game, and that's throw the ball away. When he's scrambling to the sideline, chunk it away, Sam. Don't build snowballs back there. Look downfield. Nothing's good's going to happen from it. One was a sack. One was a backwards pass that ended up being fumble. And another was a sack fumble. So three terrible things that happen when you're just throw it away. Just get rid of it. It'll solve so many different problems. It was mind-blowing to watch, to be quite frank with you.
Mac, I'm with you too. And it's, like I said, you know, when you don't punt and you lose the game, you're doing other things to shoot yourself in the foot. The offense is not the issue. Sam Howell was out there throwing for way over 400 yards, just balling out. But when you don't throw the ball away and you don't make those mature decisions, it leads to fumbles. Charles Snowden had a field day, four sacks, and Brendan Armstrong was back. And so UVA knows they can score. They can keep up with UNC, and they just took advantage of those mistakes. UNC going forward, Mac, they have five games left. Duke, Wake, Notre Dame, Miami, Western Carolina. Those Notre Dame and Miami games are going to be huge, and they have them back to back. Can they finish 4-1? I mean, if you finish 4-1, finish 8-3 overall, that's definitely a successful year. You're not going to accomplish your goals, but it is a successful year.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, don't look over Wake Forest either now. I mean, their defense is playing out of their minds. Their offense really, really good. And I know we're going to talk about them in a second, but it is not an easy finish for UNC. And you know, it's not really things that are instantly fixable either. I mean, this is stuff that takes a little bit of time and understanding and buy-in. So it's going to be a very interesting finish. Can they do it? Sure. You know, they definitely have the bodies, the coaches, the skill set to go out there and maybe go 4-1, like you said. But you also have the ability to go 2-3, 2-4. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they finish, if they want to finish the way that the season started and the expectations that were there. You certainly have the ability. But I want to go back to UVA really quickly. Just the offense exploding, like you mentioned. I mean, they were averaging 23 points per game. Exploded for 44. Brendan Armstrong running it, passing it, whatever he needed to do, really Mr. Do-It-All. And the defense, I mean, they shut down UNC's rushing attack, held them to sub 100 yards. That's where it really starts. You think of Louisville, you think of Clemson, you think of UNC, balanced teams that want to run the ball and then build on the passing game. They allow the passing game to be molded off of the run game. If they can't run it, the offense can really struggle. And you know, I know he had 400 yards, but that's not, it was a lot of force stuff. It's not what they want to be. It's not who they want to be. So really a tremendous job by UVA.
That's another
defense thing
that stood out to me, is how UNC just couldn't run it. That was a huge deal, because we know how good that duo is. And you always talk about UNC's balance, and you're exactly right. Mm-hmm. Speed round, Mac. Let's talk about the three other games.
Speed round.
Exactly. Let's start with Wake Forest, who we were just talking about. Wake Forest handles their business. That's what we said, Wake. Handle your business. And now Wake, in addition to North Carolina and Virginia Tech, are receiving votes in the AP poll. Beal Smith and Walker III both got it done. They were effective on the ground. This was just a good workmanlike win for Wake Forest that they needed to get up there in Syracuse.
Yeah, they're really shaping out to be one of the best offenses in the ACC, Kelly, and they're super balanced. You look at Sam Hartman, what he's been able to do, not a lot of touchdowns, but production is there. When they need him to make a big throw, he can do it. He's clutch, he's confident, and those outside wide receivers are really stepping up. And of course, the slot guys already have kind of been there, done that this year, but everybody's kind of growing up at the same time. And then you sprinkle in two fantastic running backs in Christian Beal Smith and Kenneth Walker III, who Kenneth Walker is playing out of his mind. I mean, his legs never stop running. He never gives up on a play. And you saw that two or three times against Syracuse where he was dead in the water, and then he just squirts out for a touchdown. It's just like, how does this happen? But the guy's a freak of nature. Really, really been impressed with what I've seen from them on offense. And the defense, don't forget about them. They're growing up really quick. And my man Nick Anderson balled out again, had a couple of really nice
PBU
pass breakups. Exactly. He's collecting that check, you best believe it. And they're really playing inspired football as a team right now. So I think this bye week, a lot of teams, I think it's, you want to keep going. You want to keep that energy. For Wake Forest, they recharge. They're learning. They're coming together as a team. So I think this bye week is going to be really good for them going into the game against North Carolina.
Bye week and then the Heels at home. Or no, I think that game's in Chapel Hill. I'm looking at UNC's schedule. Yeah, that game's in Chapel Hill, but still, huge game. All right, I want to finish with Notre Dame. So let's get a quick thought. Duke 53, Charlotte 19. Chase Bryce did not throw an interception.
Ooh, Chase, I'm so proud of you.
Quick thought on Duke Charlotte.
Yeah, quickly, 53 points, ran the ball really well, 274 yards, 6 rushing touchdowns. Just be who you are. And that's a ground and pound team that throws when you need to. Was really impressed with them being able to do that. Only one turnover. It was with your second string. I was hoping for 0, but I'll settle for one versus 1,000 that you normally average.
We'll take it. We'll definitely take it there from Duke. All right, final game to wrap up here. And we're going to talk a lot more Notre Dame this week on the podcast with Clemson Notre Dame coming up. One of the games of the year in college football. Number 4, Notre Dame defeats Georgia Tech 31-13 in Atlanta. I think this was somewhat a vanilla game for Notre Dame. They're looking ahead to Clemson a little bit. Still won the game handily. The offense was not as explosive as last week against Pittsburgh. That's still my main concern for Notre Dame against Clemson. Are they explosive enough? Can they make plays on the outside? Do you still have that concern with Notre Dame as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's just who they are. You know, they're a running team that, you know, can pass at times and has the bodies and, you know, a lot of those guys banged up, which is unfortunate. But, you know, they have a quarterback that is a game manager and that can make throws every now and again. You know, he's not going to wow you with, you know, 80 plus completion ratings on 400, you know, plus yards and a bunch of touchdowns. He just is a great manager, escapes, very hard to tackle. Does a great job of extending plays, sometimes to a fault. You know, he needs to hang in that pocket a little bit longer and really deliver a strike. But the defense is looking really good. I mean, Kyle Hamilton, he's the best safety in the country. There's really not anybody even close. And I was hesitant to put him on my first team all ACC, you know, preseason poll or BRAC, whatever you want to call it. But I think that
preseason team.
Yeah. Thing team. He is a guy that he is it. He truly is. He can do anything on the field. Very Isaiah Simmons-ish. Mm. More of that DB version. But he can impact on the line of scrimmage, at linebacker, lined up deep, pass, whatever you need. He can do it. And the D-line had a really nice game as well. I mean, they moved that line of scrimmage backwards. They were getting after the quarterback. Defensive end number 9, Dalen Hayes, really having a good season. Senior guy, you know, he's bided his time, has had a really good guys in front of him. He's really balling out. So I cannot wait for this matchup. It's going to be a super fun game in South Bend, November 7th. Number 1 comes to town. I cannot wait to watch
it. We are really, really pumped. I want to ask you one question about Clemson Notre Dame just to end the pod here, Mac. Because like you said, we know DJ Uiagalelei is going to start. Trevor Lawrence is still out. If BC was a challenge, let's say, I mean, DJ handled it well, but if BC was somewhat of a challenge, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, that BC defense is a 5, where would you put the Notre Dame defense and how much more of a challenge is this going to be for DJ Uiagalelei?
Yeah, it'll be a big challenge. I mean, it'll be a 10. I mean, these guys are really, really good. They're one of the best in the country, probably fighting for that top spot right now. But in that same breath, they have not seen anything like what's coming to town. I can guarantee you that. They're a great run-stop defense, so it's going to be a challenge for Clemson to establish that run. And again, similar to what we just mentioned, if you don't have that balance, it's really hard, and especially with a true freshman putting all of that on his shoulders. But I think we're going to see some new twists. We're going to see some new wrinkles to this offense that fit DJ and that fit his quarterback power, more design runs, maybe even some option tendencies there. And I think will really help Clemson move the ball. Overall, though, it's going to be a great, great game.
Clemson with a whole week to prepare. We'll see what new wrinkles we see from the Tigers. And stay tuned for Wednesday. We're going to have a great guest, guys.
No doubt about it. Hey, thanks again to Richmond Weaver. He produces this podcast, does a great job for us. Thank you guys for listening. It was a great episode, a lot of fun. Can't wait to Wednesday, but in between then, go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop a little rating, a little review. Love to hear from you guys. Until next time, we'll see y'all.